The curse upon the Yedu dynasty, 6:17 through 21. We'll do 17 together, responsibly. Word meanings, tut, that, shuk, va, having heard. Te, they, ati santrashtaha, extremely afraid. Vimucha, uncovering. Sahasa, hastily. Udaram, the belly. Sambasya, of Samba. Dadrishuhu, they saw. Tasmin, within it. Mushalam, a club. Kalu, indeed. Ayaha mayam, made of iron. Tachrutvate ti santrasta. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambasya dadrishutasmin. Mushalam kalvas yasmayam. Tachrutva te ti santrasta. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambasya dadrishutasmin. Mushalam kauvayasmayam. Tachrutva te ti santrasta. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambasya dadrishustasmin. Mushalam kauvayasmayam. Tachrutvate ti santrasta. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambasya dadrishustasmin. Mushalam kauvayasmayam. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambasya dadrishustasmin. Mushalam kauvayasmayam. Tachrutva te ti santrasta. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambhasya dadrishustasmin. Mushalam kauvayasmayam. Ladies? Tachrutva te ti santrasta. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambhasya dadrishustasmin. Mushalam kauvayasmayam. Tachrutva te ti santrasta. Vimucha sahasodaram. Sambasya dadrishustasmin. Mushalam kauvayasmayam. Translation. Upon hearing the curse of the sages, the terrified boys quickly uncovered the belly of Samba, and indeed they observed that therein was an iron club. Purport. Upon hearing the words of the Vaishnavas, headed by Narada, the Yadu boys lifted the garment covering Samba's abdomen and saw the fruit of the offense they had committed against Vaishnavas by their deceit. An actual club was there to destroy their dynasty. This example shows that in a polluted society, the club of duplicity can never bring the peace found in the society of devotees. Rather, such duplicity smashes all the non-devotional activities and whimsical doctrines of the pseudo-devotees. The Yadu boys were wary about jeopardizing their advanced position, and indeed had been thinking that as long as they kept their trickery concealed, others would never be able to detect such sophisticated cheating. Nonetheless, they were unable to protect their family from the reaction of their grievous offense against the devotees of the Lord. Text 18, we can chant together. Kim kritam mandabhagena kim vadishyanti no janaha iti vivalita geham adaya mushalam yayu. The young men of the Yadu dynasty said, "Oh, what have we done? We are so unfortunate. What will our family members say to us?" Speaking thus and being very disturbed, they returned to their homes, taking the club with them. 19. Tachopaniya sarasi parinana mukashriya radya adidayam chakru sarvayada vasannidhav. The Yadu boys, the luster of their faces completely faded, brought the club into the royal assembly, and in the presence of all the Yadavas, they told King Ugrasena what had happened. Purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the word Rage refers to King Ugrasena and not to Sri Krishna. Because of their shame and fear, the boys did not approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Text 20. Shrutva mogam viprashapam drishva cha mushalam nripa vishmita bhaya santrasta vabhuhu dvarakau kasaha. O King Parikshit, when the inhabitants of Dwarka heard of the infallible curse of the Brahmanas and saw the club, they were astonished and distraught with fear. And finally, text 21. Tach churna yudhita mahushalam yadu raja sahita samudra salile prasya loham chasya vasheshitam. After having the club ground to bits, King Ahuka, Ugrasena, of the Yadus personally threw the pieces, along with the remaining lump of iron, into the water of the ocean. Purport. King Ugrasena thought, Samba and the others should not feel any shame or fear. And thus, without even consulting Sri Krishna, he ordered the club ground to bits and thrown into the water, along with a small iron lump that remained, which he considered insignificant. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakara Chakshuram Militam Mena Tasma Shri Gurave Maha. In the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, in the section dealing with Jadavarat and King Rahugana, when King Rahugana realizes who Jadavarat is, then one verse, I think it's one of the first things he says, is Naham Vishanke Sudaraja Rajan Chakshashulan Nayamasya Dandat Nagnyaka Somani Lavita Pachtach Chanke Brisham Brahmakula Vamana. So he lists, he says, I'm not afraid of, and he goes through a list of different personalities, Lord Shiva, I'm not afraid of the trident of Lord Shiva. I'm not afraid of the thunderbolt of Indra. These are, of course, extremely powerful. I'm not afraid of what the sun and the moon can do. And I'm not afraid of the weapons of Kubera. So he goes through this whole list. I'm not afraid of any of these, but I'm afraid of offending a Brahmin. I'm very much afraid of that. So here we see the result of it. And we can see how the boys, when they came to their senses, they realized what was happening, how afraid they were. So from one perspective, there was some discussion the other day about how the reaction seemed so severe. But we can see the boys' reaction here. First of all, you think, well, this club is, it's just a club. How is it going to destroy the whole dynasty? They would say, well, what are they saying? They weren't taking the sages very seriously up to that point. So they might have thought that way in a rational way. How is this one club? We heard how many members of the Yedu dynasty there were, Krishna's descendants, just teachers. They had like 30 million teachers. So this one club is going to destroy this whole dynasty? How is it possible? But they were shaking in their sandals. They were really afraid something bad was going to happen because these sages said it. So what we know, of course, traditionally in that culture, they must have been raised to be very, very respectful. In fact, that's such a pervasive attitude in Vedic culture, to have respect for one's elders, respect in so many ways, respect for the anyone who, especially those who are higher than oneself, they're given so much respect. So this the way the boys were acting here was so much out of character for the way that they were trained, even not even considering that they were Krishna's family members, but anyone in that culture, they would never imagine Narada Muni. you play a joke on Narada Muni. And just like for us, we would think, you know, who would do such a thing to Prabhupada? Play some joke on Prabhupada. I mean, make him the butt of a joke. Because that's what they were doing. They were trying to make him look like fools. Because they want the sages to predict what kind of child this was going to be. So it was actually quite an offensive thing to do. Play a joke on Narada Muni and these other great sages. So this was so out of character. Because generally they would be offering so much respect. So that whole mood, was so pervasive in the culture to offer respect. And we saw how Srila Prabhupada, he himself was so respectful. The other day in class, when Ishana Prabhu gave class, and the question came at the end, you said you were going to say something about Prabhupada's mood. And then he said, well, that was what the whole class was about. So I was thinking, you know, it seems like the thought behind the question, well, usually when we talk about Prabhupada's mood, we tend to think of something else. I'm reminded the other day we had a meeting, those of us who are going to be taking the teacher training course with Janmashtami Prabhu. And one of the things, these courses that devotees have been teaching in the MIHE and so on, they're very organized. So one of the things they do, they have certain objectives for their classes. So Janmashtami Prabhu was explaining, I think, I don't know, is it the Bhakti Shastri courses? One of the objectives was that the student should understand Srila Prabhupada's mood, right? So I think that this is the idea behind the question. What do you mean by Prabhupada's mood exactly? Because I didn't look it up in the dictionary, but I'm sure like many words, mood has a lot of, you can have a mood one day and a different mood the next day. Moods are happy and sad. So is that what we're talking about when we talk about Prabhupada's mood? I don't think that's what we're talking about. Because sometimes he was very grave and sometimes he was angry and sometimes he was laughing, his stomach rolling in laughter. So that's not exactly the kind of mood we're talking about. I think what we're talking about when we use that phrase, Prabhupada's mood, is of course, all Vaishnavas have certain characteristics. And for example, there are the 26 qualities of a devotee. But what was Prabhupada's unique style, you might say, or his approach to Krishna consciousness? And what were the most serious things he was trying to impress upon us? What did he emphasize? That's how we can say, what was Prabhupada's mood? What did he emphasize and what did he demonstrate in his own life? So this idea of respect made me think of this idea of mood, how Prabhupada was so respectful. And I think this is probably, this is the foundation of his mood, was one particular aspect of that respect, was his relationship with his spiritual master. More than anything else, this is really the foundation of everything that Prabhupada did, was his relationship and the seriousness of his commitment and loyalty and taking to heart the order of his spiritual master, his relationship with his spiritual master. That was really the core of his being. We know how he famously said that he get from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, how the order of the spiritual master should be the life and soul of the disciple. So in a few words, I think we could say that was Srila Prabhupada's mood. That Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself and his order and his instructions and everything he said, every word that he said, that filled Prabhupada's being. That was his mood. That was the essence of everything he did. And this, of course, this is, we could say, like I said, that the Vaishnavas, they're at certain things that they have in common. But even this, we can see that for Prabhupada, it was so overwhelming and so deep and so concentrated and focused. This particular idea, I'm sure that many of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, they knew that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted Krishna consciousness spread outside India. He was not a small thinker. Even what he himself did to start 64 temples in India, that's not an easy thing. There's so many temples already, why start another temple? But he started 64 temples, and he spread Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which for many people, well, this is a Bengali thing. But he spread Bengali Vaishnavism all over India because he was expansive. He was always thinking that way. It's not just meant for Gaudiya Desh. It's meant for all of India and all of the world. So Srila Prabhupada, he understood that so clearly, and he accepted it into his heart. We know that he would say that, you know, I wasn't able to fulfill the order of my spiritual master right away, but I never stopped thinking about it. I was always planning, when am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? Someday, I'm going to do this. Even later, of course, Prabhupada writing to his disciples sometimes, he would say, I wasted so many years, I should have done it, you know, earlier. But still, it was there within my heart. So that was his mood, especially, he was carrying that. So this ties in, I think, to the other part of, or it goes together with how we consider, what we consider uniquely Prabhupada and uniquely Prabhupada's mood, was this burning desire to spread Krishna consciousness among his godbrothers, certainly. And of course, and that was manifest in what he was able to do. It produced results. Because that desire was so strong, Krishna fulfilled that desire. Nobody else did it. Prabhupada did it. You may have heard this story before. I heard it secondhand, so I don't know if it's actually documented anywhere, but I heard that Prabhupada told this story, that sometimes his godbrothers, some of his godbrothers, of course, we know that they were critical of him, even though after Prabhupada did so much, there were some who were still critical. And one of the things some of them supposedly said was, well, anybody could have done it. No. Anybody could have done what Bhaktivedanta Swami did. He just went there and just, you know, time and circumstance, basically. These things just happened. So anyone could have done it. So Prabhupada replied to that, this is the way I heard it. He told the story of Christopher Columbus. You may have heard this. Someone challenged Christopher Columbus that anybody could have gone to America. And he said, no, it required intelligence. And he challenged them. This is a story, it's apocryphal, I don't know if it's written, but he took an egg and he said, balance this egg on its tip on the table. So different people, they tried to do it. People tried, nobody could get it, or he tried to stand an egg up and just flops over. So they said, all right, you do it. So he just tapped the end of the egg just a little bit and made the bottom flat and stood the egg up. And they said, oh, anybody could have done that. But of course, they didn't do it. Huh? They didn't think of it. So, but Prabhupada did it. Yeah, maybe anybody could have done it, but he's the one who did it. So why did he do it? How did he do it? Why could he do it? Because of intelligence. That's the other thing. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Krishna gave him the intelligence. And of course, that strong desire. So of course, that also ties in with, you know, what drove it. It wasn't only the order of the spiritual master. That may be the impetus, the initial impetus that took it. The seed was planted right from the beginning. I always think of this, and we had this expression, even a moment's association with a pure devotee can give one all perfection. So sometimes we think, well, maybe that's kind of an exaggeration, maybe. A lot of things kind of sound like an exaggeration. But actually, probably just the first moment he met Bhaktisiddhanta, he told him to preach to the English-speaking world. That was one moment, and look, it changed history. How powerful one moment is. A few words from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur changed the course of history. course, it's still unfolding. We got a ways to go. But that's the power. So Srila Prabhupada, going back to this idea of respect, he had respect for the order of his spiritual master, and he had respect for all living entities also in the sense of compassion. He had so much compassion that he, of course, what he undertook for the carrying out the order of the spiritual master. Actually, this just triggered a thought, something I wasn't thinking of, but it's something that I've thought of before. We read in the fourth canto, is it the fourth canto? Yeah, I think it's the fourth canto, where it says that when one becomes a completely pure, liberated soul, then one is like the coconut, the meat of the coconut within the shell, so completely detached. So sometimes I think, well, we talk to Srila Prabhupada and we glorify all the great austerities that he did and so on. So someone may think, well, he wasn't really experiencing anything. He was completely detached from this world. But I think Prime Govinda Prabhu recently, I think you made some point like that, how actually the devotees, they do in a sense come into this world and they experience the same things that we do. They're to be one with us, as Prabhupada said when he arrived in Dallas. I didn't fly on pigeons, I came in an airplane to be one with you. So to be one with us, that experience is there. And I also heard some senior devotee talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. It was interesting the way he stated it. He said, because wherever Lord Chaitanya or wherever Krishna appears in his incarnations, he always is accompanied with his associates. So the way the devotee presented, he said, so the associates of Lord Chaitanya, it's not like they were sort of like sadhana associates in the beginning. They were just practicing devotees. And they were thinking, well, he's Krishna. They had this realization that this Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. So where are his associates? And then they thought, oh, that must be us. We must be those Nityasiddha associates of Lord Chaitanya. So they're also, in a sense, you can say, kind of experiencing. You know, these things, are, in a way, they're inconceivable because we don't really know what it's like, what it means. We say we can't understand the Vaishnava, really, because we're not in touch with transcendence. It's beyond, it's in another dimension that we don't have access to. So the thinking and the state of consciousness, how it works exactly, it may be difficult for us to comprehend. But still, I think we have to be careful of this idea that, oh, it wasn't a big thing for Prabhupada. He suffered heart attacks, but he's a liberated soul, so why make a big deal out of it? So obviously, that's a very offensive way to look at it. We shouldn't think that way. We should think, no, Prabhupada did these things. And he himself, of course, never presented himself as being above everything. He had headaches, and when things went on, that he did the problems in his society, and he, in so many ways, he acted like an ordinary person in this world. He responded to the circumstances in this world. So he did, this is all related to the point I was making, that his compassion and his respect for the jiva, this overriding mood of Srila Prabhupada, was demonstrated in the way he lived his life and all the sacrifices that he undertook. Now this idea of respect, I was thinking also in Prabhupada's mood, it came out in so many ways, just like this morning, we're just hearing his respect for Krishna's energy, Krishna's money. Because Prabhupada always thought, this is not my money, this is Krishna's money. This is something very important for all of us, actually. We should always think, it's Krishna's money. Just like, it's kind of funny when you read the, I think it's Vamanadeva's appearance, yes. So different personalities are given, but giving Vamanadeva different things. So what does Kuvera give him? He gives him a begging pot. So I was thinking, so it set the precedent for so many ISKCON treasurers, you know. Prabhu, you need a new toothbrush. Well, here's some sticks of incense, you know. Go out and sell a book, and you can get a new toothbrush. So here, Vamanadeva, here's a begging pot. You're a brahmachari. Kuvera, he's the treasurer of the demigod. So he didn't give him money, he gave him a begging pot. So because, and then, you know, I was thinking in this day and mood, Srila Prabhupada, he always saw it as Krishna's money. We should see it that way too. For example, if we want to spend money, we should be thinking, well, it's actually Prabhupada's money. So we, in our minds, maybe at least, well, would Prabhupada allow me to spend this money in this way? Maybe kind of a scary way to live one's life that way, but I mean, it's a very, you know, a serious idea that it's not our money, actually. It is Krishna's money. It is the spiritual master's money. Everything we have We're just servants. In that verse in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam about the brahmachari, brahmachari guru kule vasandanto durorhita acharan dasavat nicha. The one's behavior, the brahmachari's behavior, we're all in one sense supposed to keep that mood, because the idea of the brahmachari is a very, very strong relationship with the spiritual master. He's the master. This is the word we say all the time, spiritual master. He's actually our master, and we're the servant. So it says, acharan dasavat nicha, just like a humble dasa, servant. He's the master, I'm the servant. So everything belongs to him, I'm just a servant, and so it all has to be used in his servant, or in a way that he would recognize and agree with. So Prabhupada, of course, he saw everything as Krishna's. He had that respect for the world. All the energy of Krishna, we saw he hated to see energy being wasted. I know I'm a bit like that myself. I can't stand to see lights on and when they don't need to be. Faucets dripping, you know, through the Prabhupada. Hated to see that. Somebody leaves a faucet on, these kinds of things. Although in my mind, sometimes I think, well, what's the big deal? The water's going to just back into the earth, isn't it? It's not going to disappear. But it is wasteful. Prabhupada saw it that way. It's a waste of Krishna's energy. So this attitude of respect for the authority, going back to Prabhupada's respect for his spiritual master and his spiritual master's order. So it's not only his spiritual master, but the whole Guru Parampara. Prabhupada's fidelity to the message of the Guru Parampara was so strong. We're hearing recently about Sahajyas. So, of course, this comes in the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Very strongly against this. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course, also. So Prabhupada picked up this mood. Complete intolerance for any bogus philosophies. So there are many aspects, of course, of Prabhupada's philosophy, of Prabhupada's mood. But this ties into it. Why was that distaste for Upasampradaya's Upasiddhanta so strong? Because he got it from his spiritual master. Because he identified, you can say, so strongly with the order and the mood of his own spiritual master. That he was what saturated him and saturated his own life and his own consciousness. So these thoughts came up as I was looking at this, and I was thinking how this mood was so unusual. It would have been so unusual. These boys, the way they were treating these sages, was so out of character for themselves and for the whole culture. So they had a particular mood there, and Srila Prabhupada had a particular mood with which he. We see him in a particular way, our Prabhupada, and the idea is that we are in the same mood. It's just like, I think we were reading the other day, somewhere it came up, that one should worship with devotees and serve with devotees in the same mood. Just like we serve with Krishna bhaktas, because we want to be Krishna's servants, not necessarily Ram bhaktas. Although, you know, of course we don't disrespect Lord Ram, we love and worship Lord Brahma, but we're Krishna bhaktas. So similarly, this idea of the mood of the spiritual master is what permeates ISKCON. And we speak of Prabhupada as the founder, acharya of ISKCON. So all the members of ISKCON should be thinking and feeling the same way that Srila Prabhupada did. Okay, so I'll stop here. Let me just, for the sake of it, read one verse. Tachrutva te ti santoshta vimucha sahasodaram sambasya dadrishu tasmin mushalam kalvayas mayam. Upon hearing the curse of the sages, the terrified boys quickly uncovered the belly of Samba, and indeed they observed that therein was an iron club. Janashtami Prabhu is the, I was turning it on. Wait for the microphone to manifest. You want to take the microphone?
think this is a little off course. Thank you, rest of the class.
Now, you're doing a good job, so hang in there. Yeah, we'll think about it. We'll put it up to the board. Couple points. One, you know, that you were speaking about the respect in Veda culture. One issue that came to my mind is that women and children weren't held accountable for their misbehavior. There was one time this came up in a discussion when I was Tamil president in Denver. There was a fall down between one of the men and one of the women in the temple, and this came up. Badri Narayan was just happened to appear at the time this came out. So he was telling about how Prabhupada came to Detroit, and there was a Sankirtan leader that had a dharmic relations with two or three of the Brahmacharinis. So Prabhupada met individually with each of the participants in this mess. And he told the Brahmacharinis, this is not good for your spiritual life, you shouldn't do this. Okay, and then with the Sankirtan leader, he said, this is really wrong what you've done. And he sentenced him to 1 year without any sweets. He had to abstain from eating sweets for 1 year. That was his reaction. Most of us were in those days, you know. So, anyway, that was one point, you know, that came to my mind. Do you have a response to that? About, you know, that in other words, women and children weren't held accountable for misbehavior. They were corrected, but it wasn't like a huge reaction. But here, these young boys, they messed up, and I know it's part of Leela, but it was a point, you know, about Vedic culture. No thoughts. Okay. One other thing, you know, I think this was in the Srila Prabhupada Leelamrita. There was, somewhere in the writings of Satsrupa Maharaj, where there was a discussion between Prabhupada's godbrothers, and there was Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was there, and some of Prabhupada's disciples were present. And the discussion was kind of similar to what you were speaking about, but they were saying, the godbrothers were saying, yeah, he was so successful because he was an expert businessman. And then another one piped up and said, no, he was so successful because he was expert at dealing with low-class people. And then Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, he was very assertive and said, no, you're all wrong. He was successful because he had complete faith in the holy name.
To know the mood of the great Paramahansa like Prabhupada is very difficult. And Srila Prabhupada was predicted by Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There will be someone to spread the holy name every time and believes. So he was not successful because of this or that or anybody can do it. Because it was predicted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many great acharyas, the coming of Srila Prabhupada. And one of his moods is he was in Los Angeles in 76 against the Sahaja mood. He was so angry. Many of the boys don't want to see the mood of Srila Prabhupada, an angry mood. So anyway, there's just a comment.
When you're talking about the boys tricking the sages, I was remembering the story, Prabhupada Memories, you probably know it. I think the devotee's name is Bhaskar, with the slippers. Yeah, do you want to tell that story? Because it seems applicable. I mean, it kind of goes like every day Prabhupada, you know, puts on his shoes, outside the door, he puts on his shoes, maybe goes to the temple, takes his, you know, goes in like that. And, you know, I always wear his shoes, so one of the devotees, Bhaskar, says, oh, I'm going to, you know, buy some shoes, and then I'm just going to replace them. He's telling Shudakirti this. I'm going to replace them, and then I'll have shoes. I'll have, you know, Mahaprasadam, Prabhupada's shoes. Shudakirti's like, oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that, you know. It's a wonderful idea. So the next day, the devotee, you know, he takes the shoes, and how does that work now? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it didn't work. And so Shudakirti was so excited about doing it again. And then Bhaskar came and said, oh, you know, don't do it. Shudakirti says, why? He says, well, Prabhupada sent someone to get me. And he brought the shoes. He gave him the shoes. He said, but let Bhaskar know that it's never right to trick the spiritual master.
Hare Krishna. I very much appreciate your glorification of Srila Prabhupada, because it's something that I have a hard time dealing with, which is that people say, I love Prabhupada, and they have another spiritual master who's either Prabhupada's godbrother or disciple of Prabhupada's godbrother, and I just can't understand it. So do you have any... Don't want to comment on that, okay, but I think the point is to appreciate Srila Prabhupada for what he did and, you know, really understand his incredible position that, like you were acknowledging for intelligence or for faith in the holy name or commitment to the spiritual master, but it was all those things and more. You know, Srila Prabhupada was a person, an individual. Anyway, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. When you read the part about Ugrasena and how he didn't consult Krishna, and he felt that the boy shouldn't suffer, so he ground the club. And it made me think of something a little different, actually, I guess because of I'm a parent and a teacher. And I kind of saw it as bad parenting, you know, like he kind of enabled him, because I see that now a lot, that maybe it wasn't like that, but it's just the way that I saw it. That parents kind of have a tendency to you know, sort of try to take up the suffering, yeah, make excuses for their kids when they do something wrong, and then, but the thing is, if they don't suffer for it, then they don't grow. So I just wanted to share that. That's what I saw.
You were mentioning about Prabhupada's struggles and how genuine he actually experienced these struggles. One time in an interview, actually for Yadavara's movie, film, Harisori Prabhu was recalling that Prabhupada told him in his first year there in New York, he would often go back to the shipyard and look at the schedule for a trip back to India. And the agent there, he says, you keep coming, but you never book a ticket. And Prabhupada's reply was, yes, when I become discouraged, I come here to see about going back. Interesting.
Well,
That was also a big part of Srila Prabhupada's move, you know, that he kept going even though everything was so adverse, particularly in the beginning. But, and also, like in Juhu, you know, like the devotees that were there, they couldn't understand, what are we doing this for, you know? But Prabhupada had this vision, and he noticed, you know, I think it was even before he left India, he noticed this land. I think I heard this story. And I said, this is a really special place. And God, it's just like a chakra there, you know, in that whole super wealthy area. There's thousands of people come for darshan every day. And they called the project, you know, after they finally got rid of all the residents, you know, in the back apartments. And now they've built the Heaven on Earth project. It's like mind-blowing, you know, with the facility that's there. So Prabhupada, the same thing, you know, I mean, there are many discouraging things, and certainly could experience them, but deep in his heart, you know, he just kept going.